Well, let's just introduce you to that hatchet woman. Now, as I was saying, Noah blessed his sons, and he cursed one of them. Through the blessed line, Shem, come the Semites. If you'll read in the Old Testament, you'll find that as they were seizing prisoners in one battle, to identify one of the tribes of Israel, they said, make him say Shibboleth. Because he couldn't say Shibboleth. He said Sibboleth. It's like my dad and Uncle Plez down in the Ozarks. They went down to the store. And Plezzy says, I want a wetter. And my dad says, Mr. Duden, he owned the store, Mr. Duden, Plezzy can't say setter. Eventually, Plezzy got a sweater. Some of them couldn't say shibboleth. They could only say sibboleth. I mean, I know some sections of town, they'd have one hell of a time communicating. Anybody couldn't say shibboleth, it would be in real trouble, would they? They'd be running around talking ordinary language to people and everybody be sitting down. It's a real handicap, come to think of it. But that's another subject. Likewise, Shemites became... If you ever try to teach and look at Sammy, my Lord, shibboleth. I can say shibboleth. In fact, I can say about anything. I can say Shemites. Be awful. That's how we got Semites. People couldn't say Shemites. Well, through the Shemites came Abram. And from Abram came Isaac, with a little help from Sarah. You know, all those beggars in the Bible give no credit to that hard work of the women. I mean, these feminists are forever trying to improve the Bible, but they're like everybody else deals with the Bible. They get on peripheral matters. They never really come to the meat of things. Where's the beef? Now, there's a place for the feminists to start. Oh, it's going to be a good one tonight. Friday night, all the saints sober up with Scott. That's a good place for them to start. I mean, you just read those genealogies. Abram begat. That dirty old pup never labored a minute. How do you get all the credit for begging? Abram beget. Isaac beget. Jacob beget. I mean, Leah and Rachel weren't even enough for him. That old blind walleye, he goes in the tent, he can't tell one sister from another. And anybody believes that's got sawdust between his ears. That old dirty pup feeling around there in the dark. Tried to tell us he didn't know it was Rachel. What did he call her all night? I just get mad thinking about it. Crawling around there in that tent, trying to convince me he didn't know the morning that it was the wrong woman. Shemites. That's what he was, a Shemite. Stars and sand. I think those feminists ought to do a crusade for credit in the beginning. They ought to have an equal beget amendment. What I'm trying to do is, you know, get on the right side before Ron sings that song. Well, old Jacob, the fruit doesn't fall very far from the tree. Sure doesn't. His wife died and he was comforted. No, he comforted himself. I've tried to figure out what do you suppose he did? What? I want to know, how do you suppose he spelled comfort? His wife died, and Judah comforted himself. Then when he got done comforting himself, he went looking for abroad. He went abroad. And he had that strange saying, go to, I pray you. No, go to, I pray thee. Let me come in unto thee. I've been practicing that. All around the water tanks. Go to, I pray thee. Let me come in unto thee. Thee. Was said. No, that's what he said. It was his daughter-in-law. And he didn't know her. Well, he knew her in a biblical sense. Like father, like son. I mean, you know, even a one-night stand with a first-name relationship, Tamar's Tamar. Just like that old pup, Jacob. Like father, like son. All a bunch of dirty rats, you know that? When I was 11 years old, my mother and dad came in one day and I was having one of my raging fits. I'd thrown the Bible on the floor and it says, they're all a dirty bunch of rats. I knew that when I was 11 years old. And that Abraham, Anybody make covenants the way he made it, there's something wrong with him. I bet that old rat, if he bought 1,000 acres, he'd divide it up into 1,000 separate acres. Buy each property separate. Dirty old rat. You know, if you can read the Hebrew, you know what he did to his wife down in Egypt? When he took his wife down in Egypt and said, she's my sister. The original has it. The king in Egypt took her as his wife and knew her. They don't make that plain in the King James. A lot of things they don't make plain. King James, like that laying a hand on the thigh bit. I'm glad they didn't. I mean, you know, we wouldn't even have Genesis in the Bible if they'd made it plain. Can't you see them King James scholars sitting around saying, how are we going to do this now? I mean, how are we going to write this one down to get away with it? Old King James will fall off his throne. We really translate it the way it is. Well, just get as far as the thigh. Good suggestion. Thigh. Away they go. Fruit doesn't fall very far from the tree. So Judah had a little fling with his daughter-in-law. Said he didn't know her. And she says, pay. He said, I'm bringing money with me. I'm about credit. Fine with me. Give me all your cards. Months went by. She's pregnant. Judah says, stone her when he gets the news. She pulls out his credit collateral and says, remember this? And Zerah and Pharez were born. Zerah's hand comes out first. Midwife wraps red string around it. Lo and behold, the other one is born. She calls him Breach. Names him Pharez. That means Breach. Names Zerah the name that means seed. A fight is built in because God had said, Judah, of the birthright blessings, shall have the right of kingship, scepter, and the right to make the laws. But there was a conflict built in. Zerah's hand came out first. Let me get ahead of the story. I laugh, I lose my voice. What do you make me laugh for? You're hopeless. They went down to Egypt. The promise was that Judah's sons would reign. Which one? Zerah or Pharez? Well, the matter seemed to be settled. They were ruling in Egypt. And it was settled by Upper Egypt when the Pharaoh came down and kicked them out. Most of the people remained as slaves. The rulers escaped. Among the rulers were the sons of Zerah, Dardanus and Chalcol. Dardanus founds Troy. Another son founds the ruling primal city of Greece. They get into a fight over a woman. The fruit doesn't drop very far from the tree. The son of Uncle Dardanus, grandson down the line, steals the wife of the son of Uncle Chalco. Down the family tree a bit. And all the relatives in Greece launch 1,000 ships to deliver Helen from Troy. Homer's poem records the battle. It ends with the death of Hector. The Odyssey, the Iliad's the fight. The Odyssey is the trip of the Grecian heroes home. The great Latin poet Virgil picks up in the Aeneid the story of Aeneas, son of Zara, through Dardanus, fleeing from Troy, his father on his back, his son by the hand. Virgil's poem takes him to Carthage. A woman named Dido that has been a subject of much debate. They're always having trouble with women, these people. Of course, they got this commission, Stars and Sand, that requires the cooperation of women. They don't give them much credit, but they use them and abuse them and adore them. From Carthage to Italy, where he's given the daughter, Aeneas that is, of the king of the Latins. They produce Romulus. The son he brought with him marries also the little lad he led out by the hand. He has a son named Brute. The story of Brute is encompassed in Geoffrey of Monmouth's famous record of the kings of England. You can pick it up in the Pelican Classics. Geoffrey of Monmouth, the history of the kings of Britain. Brute, in a hunting accident, kills his father, is banished by law, though it was accidental, returns to Greece, discovers Trojans in slavery, leads a revolt, flees the Trojan slaves, is given about 400 ships by the Grecian king, sets out to retrace the path his grandfather had followed, as outlined in the Aeneid. He lands in the Iberian Peninsula, named for the Ibero, Zaragoza. Earlier descendants of Zara had settled there. He then goes to England, lands at Totnes, where the marker can now be found, founds New Troy, the original name of the city now called London, divides his kingdom between his sons, giving names to the territories which we have read, and his descendants continue to reign in England. We now come past King Lear. To King Gorboduc, subject to the first tragedy written in the English language. Can I pick it up here, or do I have to keep reviewing? You should have been listening. Look, if you listen on Channel 18, we are 24 hours a day on KHOF FM, 99.5 FM, in the Los Angeles area. We are simulcast at this moment. In 20 minutes, we will join Channel 56 in Orange County and be simulcast and carry on until 3 a.m. But 24 hours a day, we're on 99.5 FM. You ought to turn it on in case the sound goes off on TV and hear us. I'm 24 hours a day. If you're in certain areas, Long Beach, Dimension Cable carries us off Westar 5 24 hours a day. Valley Cable carries us all night long, from about 9 p.m. until the wee hours of the morning, all through the valley. Rogers and California Cable down in Orange County carry us in many cities 24 hours a day. You need to check. You're not limited to these short, little, two-hour segments. I'm not going to review now. That's all review you get. The family of the king wasn't a happy one. Well, Gorboduc, he was the subject of the first tragedy written in the English language. Once very famous, still read with interest for many students of literature, not now played in theaters. You won't find it in Westwood. Gorboduc had two sons, Ferrex and Porrex. Now we know where that cleaning fluid got its name. Both of whom were ambitious to succeed him. The queen, whose name was Widen, or Widen, was devoted to Ferrex, who appeared to have been less ambitious than his brother Porrex. Both princes seemed to be impatient of the long rule of their father, and they gave him no rest until he divided his kingdom between them. Some say it wasn't a voluntary act that the sons imprisoned him. In any event, he was shorn of his power, divided his kingdom between Ferrex and Porrex. Porrex was the mean one. He plotted the assassination of his brother. Now, we have traced the kings of England from Brute through old King Cole, the merry old soul, through King Lear to Ferrex and Porrex now, and Gorboduc. We have seen that English literature, English place names record all this history. Yet we grow up and study our heritage and know nothing about it. Porrex plotted the assassination of his brother. The latter, Ferrex, through a friend, became aware of the design against his life and made good his escape across the channel. He was kindly received by Suard, the king of the Gauls. Suard soon led an army into Britain to assert the rights of the exile. The Gauls were no match for Porrex, who utterly defeated and scattered the invaders. And I'm going to follow this line right on up to Constantius. Now, the Brute line will break off, but we're going to follow it all the way. The kings of England, that is. The Gauls were no match for Porrex, who utterly defeated and scattered the invaders, and Ferrex was slain. Queen Widen was aroused to madness at the death of her favorite son. Probably her own life wasn't safe. Anyway, she determined upon a terrible vengeance against the unlimited power of Porrex. She matched her own cunning. Now, women, fellas, are cunning. 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 What's that hat say over there? Does that say women games? Summer games. Boy, my eyesight's going bad. I mean, it looked like women from here. Summer games. Okay, we're safe, friends. Against the unlimited power of Porrex, she matched her own cunning. I mean, I was going to give my brother a warning over there. Cunning. She seems to have taken none of the soldiers or officers into her confidence. She trusted no man. Indeed, it would appear that she did not communicate her plan to any man. Is that the definition of cunning? Perhaps she dissembled her grief when in the presence of the king. That means she hid it. Now, she secured the cooperation of some women of the court whom she could trust implicitly. Now, I asked this the other night. I got to ask it again. Can you women trust another woman? Well, why can't we men trust you? Heck yes! Somebody said, can we trust you? Absolutely! All of Jacob's traits went into the female line. It's women that have been catching heels ever after. We're trustworthy. Oh, Some of these impoverished women have never met a trustworthy man. Keep the camera off of them. They're just, you know, don't make famous out of people who know nothing. I know, listen. I heard Rex Harrison sing, "Why Can't a Woman Be Like a Man?" That's Bible, folks. That's King James incarnate. Heard that song? Men ain't like women. She secured the cooperation of some women of the court whom she could trust implicitly. Men, the moral is, if you ever see two of them together, run like hell. Then, when a favorable opportunity came, she succeeded in stealing into the chamber where the king lay asleep. Her women accompanied her and were well armed. Don't ever sleep with a room full of well-armed women. I want San Francisco to stand and cheer right now. Probably the safest city in America. Her women accompanied her. There's just something evil about that phrase. Her women accompanied her. And were well armed. I think we ought to pass a gun law. No woman's going to have a gun. The infuriated mother buried an axe in the brain of the king as he slept. These women are cunning. See, that's so bloody, you know. Why don't you read something spiritual out of the King James? All right. Let's read something spiritual out of the King James. You want me to read something spiritual out of King James? Now Heber the Kenite, which was of the children of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, had severed himself from the Kenites and pitched his tent under the plain of Zaanaim, which is by Kadesh. And they showed Sisera the Barak, the son of Abinoam, was gone up to Mount Tabor. And Sisera gathered together all, you know the song of the Deborah, and they gathered on Mount Tabor. Barak came down with 10,000 and conquered Sisera and his scythe wheeled chariots that had big swords on the wheels as they turned, cut people up, steel line or iron wheeled chariots. Sisera gathered together all his chariots, even 900 chariots of iron. All the people that were with him from Harosheth of the Gentiles under the river Kishon. I'm on page 297, Judges 4, my Bible, 14th verse. And Deborah said unto Barak, "Up, for this is the day in which the Lord had delivered Sisera into thine hand. Is not the Lord gone out before thee?" So Barak went down from Mount Tabor and 10,000 men after him, and the Lord discomfited Sisera and all his chariots and all his host, the edge of the sword before Barak, so that Sisera lighted down off his chariot and fled away on his feet. But Barak pursued after the chariots and after the host unto Harosheth of the Gentiles, and all the host of Sisera fell upon the edge of the sword, and there was not a man left. Howbeit, Sisera fled away on his feet to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. For there was no peace between Jabin, the king of Hazor, and the house of Heber the Kenite. And Jael went out to meet Sisera and said unto him, turn in, my lord. Turn in to me. Fear not. Fear not. And when he had turned in unto her into the tent, she covered him with a mantle. And he said unto her, give me, I pray thee, a little water to drink, for I am thirsty. And she opened a bottle of milk and gave him drink and covered him. Isn't she sweet? Again he said unto her, stand in the door of the tent. And it shall be, when any man doth come and inquire of thee, and say, is there any man here? That thou shalt say, no. The ego of some men. He thought he had her in his hand. Then Jael, Heber's wife, who had said so sweetly, turn in, my lord. Can you just hear it dripping, my lord? Then Jael, Heber's wife, took a nail of the tent. Now that's a tent peg, my friend. A tent peg. You ever seen a tent peg? That is longer than that. A tent peg. And took a hammer in her hand. And went softly unto him. Spiritual. King James. Went softly unto him. And smote the nail into his temples. And fastened it into the ground. For he was fast asleep and weary. Now comes the understatement of the year. So he died. And behold, as Barak pursued Sisera, Jael came out to meet him and said unto him, come, and I will show thee the man whom thou seekest. The mighty warrior that you're pursuing. And when he came into her tent, behold, Sisera lay dead. And the nail was in his temples, plural, through both of them, to the ground. So God subdued on that day Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the children of Israel. The hand of the children of Israel prospered and prevailed against Jabin, the king of Canaan, until they had destroyed Jabin, king of Canaan. Then sang Deborah and Barak, praise ye the Lord. The fruit does not fall very far from the tree. There are people who say the Celts could not be the Israelites because they're headhunters. What do you think David did to Goliath? The mother buried an axe in the brain of the youth as he slept. Nor was she satisfied then with what she had done. Her attendants, them women, them trusted ones, her attendants struck the dead body again and again until it was literally hewn to pieces. Don't ever go to sleep when cunning women are in the tent or the room. I'm telling you, men, happiness is the ability to get along without sleep. Thus died the last direct descendant of Brute. The royal line had become extinct, it appeared. When the deed of Biden became known, there was a great uproar in the people. Gorboduc was dead. Biden alone remained to represent the royal power. There was great resentment against her. She was driven from the throne. Dire confusion long reigned in Britain. Many false claimants arose and contended one with the other for the supreme power. The tragedy of Gorboduc was written nearly 3.5 centuries ago by Thomas Sackville, the Earl of Dorset, and was acted before Queen Elizabeth early in her reign. Did you see that old queen watching that tragedy where this other queen split the head of her son who was king with an axe and the women all chopped it to pieces? Now, Queen Elizabeth, do your duties. Be naturally sweet like the rest of these women. Sackville, being a classical scholar, wrote his tragedy in the Greek form. The part of Sackville's tragedy in Gorboduc, which is best known today, is the chorus of the fifth act, following the murder of Porrex, the last descendant, apparently, of Brute. The lust of kingdom knows no sacred faith, no rule of reason, no regard of right, no kindly love, no fear of heaven's wrath, but with contempt of God and man's despite. Through bloody slaughter doth prepare the ways to final scepter and accursed reign. The son so loathes the father's lingering days, nor dreads his hand in brother's blood to stain. O wretched prince, nor dost thou yet record the yet fresh murders done within the land of thy forefathers with the cruel sword, bereft Morgaine his life with cousin's hand. Thus final plagues pursue the guilty race whose murderous hand, imbrued with guiltless blood, ask vengeance still before the heaven's face, with endless mission, mischief on the cursed brood. The wicked child thus brings to woeful sire the mournful plaints to waste his weary life. Thus do the cruel flames of civil fire destroy the parted reign with hateful strife. And hence doth spring the well from which doth flow the dread black stream of mourning, plaint, and woe. With the exception of its chorus, our first English tragedy was written in blank verse. Shakespeare and others changed it. One critic remarks how astonished he was to find in British legendary lore so admirable a plot for a tragedy as the story of Ferrex and Porrex. Spenser, in The Faerie Queen, thus comments on the story. But oh, the greedy thirst of royal crown that knows no kindred nor regards no right, stirred Porrex up to put his brother down, woe unto him assembling foreign might, made war on him and fell himself in fight, whose death to avenge his mother's merciless, most merciless of women, wide in height. Her other son, last sleeping, did oppress, and with most cruel hand him murdered pitiless. Here ended Brutus' sacred progeny, which had 700 years this scepter borne, with high renown and great felicity, the noble branch from the antique stock was torn. Through discord and the royal throne forlorn, thenceforth this realm was into factions rent, whilst each of Brutus boasted to be born, that in the end was left no monument of Brutus nor of Britain's glory ancient. I'm trying to make a point without reviewing for KDOC that all English history and art and monuments and place names recognize this history of the line of Brute, of the line of Dardanus, of the line of Zara, of the line of Jacob. What was God doing sending them to this island? The royal line appearing to have become extinct, A new dynasty was established after a period of much confusion. You will remember that Brut, when he founded New Troy, to Coronius, his son, he gave the strip of the seashore to the southwest, which long bore the name of its owner, a name that its succeeding ages have corrupted into Cornwall. Many vying for the rulership, with the direct line of Brut appearing extinct. They go back in the tree to find those that are descended from the line of Brutus. Among the various chiefs who stole from mastery was Dunwallo of Cornwall, a descendant now through the son of Coronius, who excelled all others in native ability and in graces of person. He defeated his rivals in a great battle, then commanded a body of picked men to array themselves in the armor of their slain enemies. Thus disguised, his soldiers had little difficulty in deceiving and surprising his foes in later engagements, in which he won continued success. And of the line of Coronius, Dunwallo of Cornwall, overcoming all opposition, is crowned King of Britain. He determined his reign should be famous for the triumphs of peace. He sought to promote the advancement of his people. He's known as the British Numa, in allusion to the second king of Rome, whose reign was marked by the establishment of Roman institutions of great value. This ruler procured for himself a crown of gold as a symbol of greater refinement of the royal power. He prepared a code of laws which endured for centuries, being known as the Molmutine Laws. Now we have a descendant of Zara, a descendant of Judah, not only king in this land over relatives that he brought from Troy, conquering the natives, he now formulates a body of law. He added solemnity and dignity to the worship of the nation's gods, impressed upon the people the sacredness of the temples, and the latter became, listen close, the temples, places of refuge where no violence could enter, and where fugitives were safe from pursuit. Later, even the highways leading to the temples were declared to be holy ground, and men who could not be otherwise deterred from violence were restrained on the sacred roads by the awe which they felt from the power above. Now, I once preached a message on the cities of refuge in Israel. Joshua establishes them in specific places and with the roads that lead to them. But they did not begin with the establishment by Joshua. Moses also was commanded by God. It's in the roots of these Semitic people who are ordered by God. You will find only one other place that these cities of refuge take root, and that's in Ireland, which we will approach by a different channel. When these same relatives in Spain that were there when Brut came by, these same relatives send the kings who will conquer the Tuatha De Danann in Ireland and set up the high kingship of Ireland. They too will set up cities of refuge. Only two places other than the Holy Land. After a beneficent reign of 40 years, Dunwallo died and was buried near the Temple of Concord, which he himself had built in the city of Troy Navant. He left two sons who were destined to achieve, am I boring you? Great distinction and be remembered for ages with peculiar interest. Their names were Belinus and Brennius. Belinus became king, but gave to his ambitious younger brother a large part of his kingdom to the north. A few years afterward, Brennius went to Norway and married the daughter of Elsingius, the Norse king. Now a very interesting connection ties the Brutus line, descendant of Zara, descendant of Judah, to the Norse king. Where did the Norse king come from? Now that I've left out there, and when I answer that question, you'll know why the ace is the highest card in the deck. You want to know?
Yes.
We'll get to it. Now, the lady, the daughter of Elsingius, the Norse king, had been loved by Guithelot, king of the Danes. See, these guys are always fighting over women. Now, who were the Danes? Denmark simply means Danesmark. Celtic tribes. They're going to meet up now. When Upper Egypt rebel and draw the rulers out, they go to Troy, they go to Greece, they now ply the Mediterranean, they father Romulus, legendary king of the Romans. They established the ancient city, Troy Navant, New Troy, where London is, divide up England and set up the lineage of the kings of England. Moses led the rest by Exodus into the Promised Land. The books of Judges unfold. The lineage of David is set up. The tribes divide into Judah and Israel for some 200 years. Israel is carried into Assyria. Judah is carried into Babylon. Judah, a portion, returns. The 10 tribes, so-called, in Assyria disappear from history as Ezra sees them march through the Caucasus Mountains to Arsareth in the 7th, 8th century B.C. At the same time, the Celts appear. Nobody knew where they came from. They just appear where the Israelites disappear. Those Celtic tribes are none other than the lost 10 tribes who then penetrate northwest Europe in wave after wave of tribal movements. Ultimately, all the tribes must gather in the British Isles. Ahead of those tribes, as Amos and Hosea have aptly said, their king went before them. While David is ruling in Palestine, Nathan comes and establishes a perpetual covenant. They are in Israel. David rules over both Israel and Judah. He didn't always do that. Even before the two kingdoms split, he was king only of Judah. And then after some 6-7 years, he becomes king of all the tribes, including the house of Israel. He rules from Babylon to Egypt. Yet the promise is his dynasty will rule over Israel in another place. Judah, the promise is they'll have the scepter, and Zara has not appeared to have a throne because the biblical record to Jesus and the Jews follows the Pharaoh's line. The 10 tribes have wandered and established their kingdoms all through northwest Europe. They must ultimately congregate in the British Isles. Zara line has brought a kingly representative in Brut from Troy to establish New Troy. Now the descendants of his son, for whom Cornwall is named, get involved with the Norsemen and the Danes. The daughter promised to Brennius had been loved by Guithelot, king of the Danes. By the way, none of this is going to come out. None of the connections come out here. This is just simple history of the kings of Britain. You ought to be able to gestalt the whole movement of God's chess plays. The lady had been loved by Guithelot, king of the Danes. The latter had once put to sea and sought his rival. Here we go again. Children of Dan going to fight children of Zara over a woman. As children of Zara fought children of Zara over a woman at Troy. Women are trouble, men. Women are trouble. Now, I'm sure they're worth it, but they're trouble. I mean, I just let them sail. A great naval battle ensued, in which the royal Dane captured the ship containing the bride. In a storm which followed, am I boring you?
No, sir.
In a storm which followed, Guithelot was separated from all the fleet except two Danish ships and one other which he had captured from Brennius. With these, he was driven upon the northern British coast. Here, he fell into the hands of Belinus. Now, Belinus, the ambitious one, had become a king in England. Brennius went to Norway. Is promised the daughter of the Norse king. The Danish king loves her. He steals her. In a storm, he ends up falling on the British coast, and the brother of Brennius, the proposed bridegroom, who is now the king in England, rejoices to find this Danish king contesting for the bride of his brother because he has heard his brother is going to come back and try to take the throne from him. Now he's got an enemy that will join him. Having learned that Brennius was preparing to make contest for the throne of Britain, Brennius soon arrived at home with his fleet and demanded his wife and government and threatened, in case of refusal, to lay waste the entire island. Both the bride and the government were refused. Great battle followed in which the forces of Brennius were routed. With a single ship and a few companions, Brennius made his escape. The Danish king was permitted to return home with his stolen bride on condition of paying an annual tribute to Belinus, the king in England, brother of Brennius, the loser in the lover battle, and acknowledging the sovereignty of the latter over Denmark. So Denmark comes under the sovereignty of the king of England. And he goes home with the stolen bride. Belinus, now following the course of his father, devoted himself to the building of great paved roads from one end of Britain to the other. Why didn't they teach us any of this? Meanwhile, Brennius, who had fled to the southeast, went with 12 companions to the court of Sejanus, a Celtic prince, where he won the favor of all the nobles and took in marriage the daughter of his host. They don't grieve very long, do they? I mean, get him in a dark tent, it doesn't really matter. The fruit doesn't fall very far from the tree. Within a year, Sejanus, the Celtic prince, died, leaving no son to succeed him, and Brennius succeeded in making himself the leader of his wife's people. He soon arranged to invade Britain with a formidable following. Brennius and Belinus were about to engage in a terrible battle when their mother, Conwina, succeeded by a strong appeal in reconciling them one to another. And they entered Troyes-en-Avant in peace and friendship, there to plan for a grand career upon the continent of Europe. The scheme of the two brothers was carried out. I'm still trying to show you that when God said to Abram and Sarah they would produce sons who would be many kings, what Bible scholarship is lost by the church restricting that promise to the Jew and to the church? Hey, I fight as strong for the Jews' promise as the Israelites' promise. But I hate to see God's word suffer because of a limited vision, because God clearly said the birthright belongs to Joseph, and the descendants of Judah will have scepter. David will have a perpetual dynasty. But wherever Zara's descendants rule, Judah's promise is being carried out. The two brothers conquered the vast country of the Gauls. They're in France now. Denmark is under their sovereignty. France now comes under their sovereignty. They invaded Italy. They even took the city of Rome. Here, Brennius died in Rome after a marvelous career of war and plunder, and Belinus returned alone to Britain. Now, Brute's grandfather produced the early legendary founder of Rome, is married to the daughter of the king of the Latins. Now a descendant of Brute is conquering all France, Italy, and Rome. Rome in the time of Brennius was by no means the terror of the world. It was later to become great, but still it was conquered by these descendants of Brute. William Warner, who lived in the great literary period of Queen Elizabeth, was an English poet, though of no great merit, wrote a long poem entitled Albion's England. It's still found in some libraries, but is little read. Concerning the sacking of Rome by Brennius and other acts of that chieftain in Italy, Warner says as follows. The stateliest towns in Italy had Bren their builder, and even Rome, the terror of the world, did at his mercy stand. The Senate giving to the earth, erewhile both war and peace, could not themselves their city scarce, their capital release. This, with the god and goods, the Gauls did put to sack and spoil, and whilst encamped here they kept such sacrilegious coil, that most did perish, few disperse, and all were out of heart, yet Bren himself, discouraged, did change in every part. But Linus spent his last years in building up his kingdom at home. He founded upon the Usk River a city which he called Caeros, but which the Romans at a later period renamed the City of Legions. This is Newport for our day. He built a Troynovant, a large tower with a gateway once known as Belinus Gate, which name became corrupted into Billings Gate, and has come down to us in that form. In recent centuries, this spot has been famous as a fish market and has acquired an unfortunate reputation for foul and profane language. In fact, the word Billingsgate is now used as a common noun to mean coarse and indecent speech. Now, there you got it, folks. Next time you get mad, I don't have to do it anymore. Then say, foul, filth, foul, filth. Just say, Billingsgate, 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 Billingsgate. That says it all. That's it. That's the word. That takes in all seven you're not supposed to say. Billingsgate, 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 Billingsgate. Boy, that'll cathart you out. Isn't it nice to get educated? I mean, where else could you learn to curse so classically? Billingsgate. What Washington, D.C. is. Billingsgate. Yeah.